So today is our 200th episode of At the Table. And before we get started, launch into our intro song and the regular intro, we thought we'd take a few minutes just to talk about At the Table. And because we were just thinking about it a few minutes ago about how this came about and what we thought it would be and what it wasn't and what it is. And so Cody and Tracy and Bo, let's Matt, you can join us in here too. Karen's with me. So 200 episodes. What was your over under, Tracy, when we started? How many did you think we'd do before we gave up on this?
Definitely not 200. I thought maybe we'd get to 50.
Wow. I thought it was 12. I thought you originally said 12.
Oh, I had hope.
You've written 13 books or 12 at the time. So I was like, if we did one per book, that would probably be, this will be a podcast series. That's kind of what the way I thought we were approaching it.
Wow.
I actually, do you remember, Pat, I remember saying to you, you know, this was in, you know, 2019, hey, you should start a podcast or we should have one here. And then you were like, what is a podcast? Do people even listen to those things? You know, and I remember the very first, I got the two microphones. We were in a different office at the time. And I was like, okay, now we have all the equipment. Who do you want me to go get? We could say any leader that you want to be on the podcast with you. And then you made a terrible mistake that day and said, well, I think you should be on the podcast. And I was like, no. That's a bad idea.
And you know, and it was that we knew how much harder it would be in terms of scheduling to get other people on. And we just thought, gosh, we just want to bring our stuff to life and have conversations about it. And again, we didn't know that, you know, there's 50,000 people that listen to this or more. And that's, which is awesome. We love our listeners, but we just thought, let's just have fun and see where this goes. And then, you know, Tracy and Bo joined and Matt speaks up and Karen helps us out. And it just kind of kept going. And I can't believe we're still doing it. I will say this. I think it is the most fun that we have. And I think it's the thing that allows us to explore topics that would have nowhere else to go. So
yeah, we've talked about that recently, that it's interesting how this is in some ways sort of the tip of the spear for us for content, that we'll finish a conversation on the podcast live and then we'll say, well, we should really do something with that insight or with that idea. And so much of that is that inventor discerner that you do live, Pat, like you do when you're in front of an audience. You're just doing it on a video screen with four other folks twice a week.
I think the other thing that's interesting about this podcast is that we really don't overplan it. And that's an understatement. But we wanted people to be with us when we were exploring things. So rather than explore things, you know, map it all out and then regurgitate it, we were like, no, let's just have that conversation. So it's a little bit more like research and development and involving our intimate group of 50,000 people in our conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, it's also interesting. Working Genius, in fact, Working Genius wasn't around when we first started this. And that was part of the reason that both Tracy and I thought we'd only do a dozen or 50 podcasts, because we didn't really have the language to say, Tracy and I are not inventors. So when we were like, when we get to the end of these models or the books, how are we ever going to think of the next podcast topic? And so what's really interesting is looking back, you know, 4 years later, is realizing that part of what we discovered in the process was one of the reasons that, like, you felt confident that we could have one a week. And we were unclear about that because we didn't have invention as a genius.
Yeah. Yeah. And for people, we've talked about this before, but when we come to the office on a day we're going to record, we almost never know what the topic is going to be. Maybe on the way to work or in the shower that morning, I'll think about it. And then I'll get to work and we'll kind of talk about it over lunch. And we'll go, oh, I think that would be interesting. I think listeners would like that. And we just did that today. And that's what we've done mostly on the 200 episode.
Pat, I don't know if you remember, you and I recorded the first episode of this podcast about four different times. And we'd go into the studio, we'd hit record, we'd do it ourselves, and then we would bring it back to have Tracy and Karen listen to it. And I remember on the very first episode, because we didn't know what this podcast would become, I remember very distinctly, I was interviewing you, like as if I was saying, like, so Pat, what is organizational health? You know, as if I didn't know what that was. And it felt so forced and just like weird that we were like, we can't do that. We can't do an episode where every time I'm asking you as if I've never read your books, to talk about your books. And so it's just interesting to see how it evolved.
Yeah. You know, Cody, you reminded me because we would listen to that. We don't listen to it. You know, we just put them out there now. If Matt thinks he needs to listen to it or let Tracy or Karen listen to it to make sure it sounds okay, we do that occasionally. But I think one of the things that I find amazing about this is when I listen to it, because I want to listen to it to say, are we doing a good job? There are times when I just turn it off and I'm like, oh, I should never do another episode. I hate listening to myself. I, you know, and then sometimes I'm like, oh, that was actually fun to listen to. So it's a weird thing to do these. And I don't know, it's kind of vulnerability inducing, if you will.
Yeah.
Okay. So a few fun facts. Launched on August 6, 2019. I don't know if we're allowed to say this, 8 million downloads over 200 episodes. That's
just bleep out the 8, Matt, and then people won't even know how many million. It could be 100 million.
It's kind of, you know? This is a sobering thing. The first episode was called Being Smart is Overrated. Coincidentally, that's what I have on my tombstone whenever that day comes.
Ba-dum-bum.
And you guys had a few segments that you tried. We do the unpaid ad now that didn't stick. Remember that?
Yeah. Yeah. We've tried some things over the years.
We're not very good at keeping to a schedule or keeping to segments, so we just eliminated all of them.
The unpaid ad is the only thing that stuck.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And I wish some of them would have stuck around, Pat, because there was a whole season where I would print off one-star reviews of your book and then make you read them at the end of the episode, and that was fun for me, personally. That
it is for me, too. I don't know why we stopped.
We should do a commemorative episode where we do some of that. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, that's true. There was, what was one of the other segments?
We did Consulting Corner, where it was like a quick hit of Pat's consulting on some of the episodes.
Corporate mumbo jumbo.
Oh yeah. That only lasted one or two episodes. That was kind of fun. So. Like where we take like corporate slang, like let's take that offline and talk about why we don't like that. Or when somebody says like, per my last email, they're basically just flipping you off in email format, you know? So there were some really fun corporate mumbo jumbo episodes, I felt like.
You know, when our biggest episode, I think still, Matt, you'll tell us. Well, what has been our biggest episode, Matt?
Working Genius. I think it's episode 64 is when we introduced the Working Genius, because that was actually the first episode of the Working Genius podcast was actually an At the Table episode that we transplanted over, because it was the simple, basic explanation of the model.
It was like a spinoff of a sitcom. You bring in a character and then they deserve their own show. Like the King of Queens. Well, Matt, other than that, what's our biggest?
I can check.
Like one was Plant Your Tree, Plant Your Friggin'
Tree.
That's
what I was going to guess.
Plant Your Friggin' Tree was a big one. That was episode 45, if I remember. That was actually the episode before I started. I think I started the week, I started At the Table Group the week that episode 46 was released.
So what Matt's saying is we haven't had a really big episode in the last 150 episodes. So we really have, it's really gone downhill.
That was during COVID. Remember, we were like, plant your friggin' tree. This is a great time. You know, like 3 months after COVID, everything was shut down. We're like, this might be the time to do something. And we had so many people go start a business or try something new or change their jobs. And they look back a year later, we get things and say, you made me plant my tree. So that was cool.
Yeah, in some ways, I love the part of the podcast that feels like an audible journal. Like I've had two kids since we've started this podcast, and so many people have, you know, reached out to me, or when we meet them at events, they're like, I feel like I know you. I know that you just your daughter was just born, or you know. So it's that part of it is kind of fun too, because it's not just the life events that happen. We've gone through COVID together, and that was like interesting retrospect to go back and listen, like, how are we processing around the world of work in the midst of that pandemic? And so there is this sort of like historical, anecdotal part of the podcast that's not just around the topics.
I lied about the downloads.
Oh, what is it?
We've got three episodes that have passed What Is Your Genius now. And they're Leaders Can't Be Pleasers, which was from last February. It's a Strategy Thing, which was from last March. And Blowing Up Performance Management, which was last June.
Hey, wow. So we have had three bigger ones.
Mm-hmm. There right. we go.
Very this nice. Year, well, that's so a good much. Way to... Well, maybe this will be the one. Episode 200. This is our bicentennial, by the way, of our podcast. I want to thank Benjamin Franklin, the first president, for starting all this off.
It only takes 200 episodes to expose how little I know about history. It took 200 episodes.
I don't think it took 200 episodes.
All righty. All right. We're 10 minutes into this. Let's go ahead and get started. Cue the music. Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, where everything we talk about is related to organizational health and the world of work. I'm your host, Pat Lencioni, and I'm joined by Cody, Tracy, and Bo on this 200th episode. How are you guys doing?
Awesome.
Fantastic.
Great.
Wonderful. We've got Matt in studio, Karen sitting next to me, writing notes, telling me how to be smart or to sound smart. And Cody, what is our topic today?
The smart, humble dilemma.
Right. The smart, humble dilemma. This is a really interesting topic to us because it's something we've been wrestling with for the last couple of years, actually. And it goes back to the humble, hungry, smart model from the book, The Ideal Team Player. Thank you, Karen. She could tell I was blanking out. The Ideal Team Player. So we talked about to be that team player, you have to be humble, hungry, and smart. And so a lot of companies use this to hire, and it's really wonderful. Dave Ramsey, our friend, has three conference rooms, one called Humble, Hungry, and Smart. It's wonderful. We've had coaches that put that on the back of their kids' helmets for lacrosse, and we really like how this has evolved. However, there was so many times when we would get stuck trying to understand a person with a client or somebody we knew or a partner, and we couldn't tell whether their challenge was that they lacked humility or smarts. And it was like, are they the skillful politician because they lack humility, or are they the accidental messmaker because they lack smarts? And so we want to talk about that today because a lot of our clients we know have struggled with this too. Sometimes it's hard to tell. And that's our topic, how to understand this segment between humility and emotional intelligence.
Yeah, and I love when we do episodes like this, Pat, because there's the core content, which we could go through the model. But this is like on the edge. It's like, okay, so every time we hire somebody or we interact with leaders, we ask them to do this self-ranking exercise. And enough times we've come across like this confusion to say like, oh, you're either unclear or we're experiencing you differently and we need a filter for how to interpret this behavior. Is it a humility thing? Is it a smart thing? So this is going to be a fun, like nuanced episodes to just around the edges of that model.
Yeah.
When you're in that situation and you're talking to somebody or you're with a team, do you think that that is because that problem or where you feel confused is, didn't they're trying to cover something up? Do you think they don't know? What do you think is behind the confusion or that dilemma?
Yeah, this is the, and for people who don't know, when a person lacks humility, but they're smart and they're hardworking, we call that the skillful politician. And that implies that they're that they might be at times manipulative or clever about that because they're trying to get their way. So that's a fairly serious accusation. And it is the hardest one to lack if you lack humility. But if they are humble and they're hardworking, but they just don't get people, they often say things that rub people the wrong way. We say it's like a puppy dog and they frustrate people and they poop on the floor and they knock furniture, and they make stains and you kind of clean up after them and say, hey, she's not a bad person or he's not a bad guy. It's just that they don't really understand how to act and they mean well. And they'll say, I'm sorry, and you just move on. So I just want to kind of establish that for people who aren't that familiar with the model. And then, Bo, you asked the great question. It's like, so what is the issue between why it's hard to figure this out? And I think a lot of people, they're wounded and they're insecure and they're not manipulative on purpose. They're just afraid to be vulnerable and to say, I'm not good at that and I don't want to own that. So what they do is they choose to be misperceived as kind of clueless, which is less painful than admitting they have a real deficiency in their skill or in their achievement or something else. So I think that it's not completely subconscious, but it's not done in a manipulative or malicious way. Nonetheless, it can be really painful. Is this making sense? I'm wondering if this is going to make sense to our listeners.
Well, I think it does. And I think the way that we do forensic analysis is actually from an event, like something happens either on a team and it hurts people around them, right? So maybe it hurt the team in some way or somebody, said something. And the question then becomes like, okay, so you have this painful event. Let's go back and try to figure out why that happened. And what you're saying is, it can happen because someone is not humble enough to say, oh, it is actually about me. Maybe they were like brazenly, they didn't care about other people's feelings. that would be one. We would need to know that to be able to coach that leader or our individual to say, hey, that can't happen again. Or that pain was caused because they lacked emotional intelligence, the smart side. And then you have to say like, oh, it was inadvertent. And the reason this one is so kind of, you need to figure this out is because like you said, on a team, the skillful politician is very dangerous. And the accidental yeah. messmaker we have all the time in the world for. So if it's about coaching someone, so this is really about getting to the heart of that to say like, hey, if we can't figure that out, it's really important because the difference between an accidental messmaker on a team and a skillful politician is dramatic.
Right.
The impact. And
it's so critical. Matt said, asked us the question before we started, hey, are we kind of tweaking the model and backing off on it? And should we do that? And it's like, no, what we're doing is adding another nuance to this. And it might very well be, Cody, that instead of calling it the skillful politician, sometimes we call it, we said we should call it the invulnerable strategist. Because they are trying to achieve something, but they're just so struggling with invulnerability that it's tough for them to come right out and admit it. Now, the impact is the same. But I think I've always been reluctant to call a person who is a generally good person, but their invulnerability prevents them from being true. I just don't want to call them the skillful politician. So I go, oh, it must be they just lack emotional intelligence. But then they do it again and again and again. And you go, I don't think they're really unaware. I just think it's too painful for them to do that. So maybe what we're trying to say to people out there is when you're struggling with this with another person or even with yourself, and you're just feeling like it's too harsh to say they're a skillful politician, it might very well be that they're just this wounded strategist, and really they're just trying to survive, and the idea of coming out and admitting their insecurities is just too painful.
Mm-hmm. I think that that operative word there is wound. You know, like, I don't yeah. think, like, there, we talk often about humility being... Not the obvious violation of humility is arrogance. The other violation is self-deprecation, right? So it's if someone is not humble and they know they're not humble, they're more likely the arrogant version of themselves out in the world. But when you talk about the wound version of this, it's actually that they cause pain because they're unwilling to admit that they're like you said, invulnerable. They don't want to admit that that behavior, that manifestation of their wound actually is hurting people. And then they are invulnerable around it, admitting it.
Yeah, it's like that really kind person on your team. They might be an introvert and they might be generally a kind person. But when they kind of have to admit that they're wrong and they struggle to do that, you want maybe skillful politician is too much. It's just they are still going to dig their heels in. And it's not because they don't understand. It's just too painful for them to go, yeah, I was wrong, or that's not the right idea. And I think we do need this new category because there's so many people that we don't look at. I mean, the skillful politician, we picture them coming into the conference room dressed impeccably and like sitting there and working the room and kissing people's butts and being disingenuous and like getting their way. Okay, that's the stereotypical movie version of the skillful politician. But what about that relatively demure, seemingly humble person that's just not vulnerable?
Right.
And we think this is a survivor. We would probably call it the invulnerable survivor might be the right term.
And the phrase you said before we hit record is that they're knowingly not going there. It's that they do know inside that I don't know how to do this, or somebody else can do this better than me, or I might have screwed up, but they're knowingly, I'm going to protect myself. I wonder if some of that is this belief that, oh, that's kind of harmless. Nobody's really going to get hurt if I'm not that humble, right? We're just all chasing the best answer. And what you're bringing to light is, yeah, it really does bring limitation to a team and to a person, even to them, when they're not willing to be vulnerable, humble, acknowledge their limitations.
I once knew about this woman who worked with one of our clients, and she worked there for quite a few years. She was a wonderful woman. She really was. But they always said, oh, I guess she just doesn't understand how she impacts people, because she kind of came across a little arrogant, but it was just too harsh to say that about her. But it went on and on and on, and they would remind her, and then it would, and it finally dawned on them that she actually was just, it was really hard for her to say, I don't have some of the skills that you guys have. And so she kind of had to pretend like other people's skills weren't that important. And over time, it really did have an impact on the team. And the question is, and Karen just wrote this down, we have to ask ourselves, is it they can't do it or they won't do it? Mm-hmm. You know, are they incapable of admitting it or they refuse to? And in some ways, it's like whether it's can't or won't, it causes really big problems on a team because they're not being vulnerable. And vulnerability is at the heart of humility. Mm-hmm. And even the kindest people in the world, if they're so wounded that they can't be vulnerable, they're sliding into the skillful politician space, but they're not really doing it actively. They're doing it passively, but it's still painful for everyone. Mm.
Yeah, I'm sort of reminded, Pat, you often talk about a very, you know, famous, influential, and scary leader in one of your speeches, and you play out sort of this comical way that you were trying to deliver feedback to him that came from his team. And as we're having this conversation, I felt like, oh, actually, that leader is probably that wound played out in that room. He did not want to say, hey, these are things, and you do a very like a good impression of saying, like, all he had to say was, hey, I get it. I know I come across this way. I've been given this feedback at home and in other jobs. And the team would have been like, oh, okay, that's great. Instead, he doubled down on the wound and the lack of vulnerability in that moment.
Yeah. You know, Matt was asking us before the podcast, he said, so what's the point of this? And we're like, point? We don't need no point. But he said, no, but what's the point? And the point is this, if you're working on teams, and Cody, you reminded me of this just now. If you're on a team and somebody is doing this, you need to say to them, hey, do you know how liberating it would be and how easy it would be if you just came clean with us and said, you know, you guys, you've seen me do this for a long time. I'm sorry. I just don't know how to admit that I'm bad at a few things. And as a result of that, I make you guys feel bad. And then I kind of say, oh, I didn't know what I was doing. But deep down inside, I think I did know. And I just wasn't comfortable enough admitting it. Or if you're listening to this and you think, well, I don't think I'm a skillful politician, but I really struggle with being vulnerable with my teammates. Just go confess that to them. And like we were talking about this beforehand, if a person had been with you for 10 years and they'd been doing this and they just came and said, you know, you guys, I think sometimes I act like I'm clueless when I frustrate you. It's not cluelessness. It's really invulnerability. Forgiveness comes really fast. Mm. So the beauty of this, there's opportunities for forgiveness and a fresh start and for feeling liberated. It just requires somebody to have the courage to be vulnerable.
As you're saying that is absolutely true of the person with good intentions, right? Like there's a version of this very thing that we're talking about where if it truly is a skillful politician, one of the crazy making tactics that they use when they're outright not humble is when you confront them about how they hurt other members of the team, it's sort of like gaslighting, right? Like, oh, I had no idea that that's how that came across. It's like that person is immensely dangerous. Whereas the person that you're describing is like, hey, I want to get better. I don't. And I know there's a wound there. There's a ceiling on my ability to be vulnerable. That's a totally different interaction than the person who's deliberately saying like, oh, actually it's a smart problem. I didn't know that I came across that way problem.
Yeah, the gaslighting. I'm glad you said that because I was thinking about it. It's like you can almost use this pretended I don't have social skills to cover up for intentional or slightly unintentional, you know, lack of vulnerability. And then you don't want to accuse somebody who has good intentions of being invulnerable or political. But after a while, you go, gosh, I kind of don't know which it is, but it's crushing the team and we have to do something about it.
Yeah. That puppy analogy, like the 18th or 20th time they chew your couch up, you're kind of like, well, I'm not sure we're the right family for this dog. But we need to find another another family.
And maybe the dog kind of likes the impact he has when he does that and we all freak out. He's like, watch this.
So one of the ways you can tell if somebody's lacking in emotional intelligence or lacking in humility is the way they respond to correction.
Ooh, tell me more about that. I hadn't thought of this.
Oh, just if you point out somebody's mess that they've made and they're like, oh gosh, I didn't realize that. Thank you so much for telling me. That's an indicator of what was behind that. Just the lack of emotional intelligence, of awareness of what was going on in the room, of other people's emotions. Whereas somebody else might respond and they're sort of careless, right? Like, okay, right. You know, and I get what you're saying, Cody, that somebody might be very skillful in the way they can hear that. Tell me how you respond to that, Pat. Does that sound like a way to kind of have a barometer about what's the low point?
I think it's fantastic. I think a person whose intentions are really good and they are genuinely vulnerable and they lack social skills, I think when you say to them, hey, that came across like this, they will usually be pretty upset, pretty sad, pretty like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it came across like that. They really should be, it should kind of rock their world a little bit. And they'll probably assure you, I'm so sorry it came across that way. Please don't think that. But if they're a little too comfortable going, no, I didn't mean it that way, then you, because it is pretty disconcerting for somebody whose intentions are good to be misperceived as political or as invulnerable. And so I think probably a person who's kind of comfortable with saying, oh no, I didn't mean it that way, it might very well be that they are in fact struggling with humility.
And that'll definitely prove itself out over the third, fourth, or fifth time you give them that. Like, they're either mortified, like, I can't believe I keep doing that, and I'm so, and they're publicly sort of admitting that, like, hey, to the team or to the people it impacted. Whereas the person who's really struggling with humility is probably more, like you said, sort of indifferent to the impact it has on the other people.
Yeah, and that woman on that team, at the client, she, when they did kind of call her on it toward the end, it was more like, no, that's not where it, she was not mortified. And I think because that could only last for so long if she tried, if she faked that. So, and so what do you do in that situation? You say, we need you to either be more vulnerable and more emotionally intelligent, or you need to figure this out. And the impact that it has on the rest of the team cannot be overstated. It's huge.
I think it's worth reiterating what you said up front, Pat, is, and you say this when you give the ideal team player speech, is the reason it's worth figuring out is because the person who has humility as a deficiency is a problem on a team. And like, we've seen them, and they, when they are outright a skillful politician, this is why we've wrestled with it so much, right? Is like, you need to figure that out, because the damage that can be done if someone is not humble on a team, when we talk about vulnerability being the foundation of teamwork, it can have a dramatic impact on the people around them and ultimately lead to a lot of destruction and hurt.
Yep, that's right. Bo, you leaned into your microphone. Were you going to say something?
Well, I was just thinking about there's of course two ways to hear this conversation. One is how we evaluate others, and the other is how we reflect on ourselves. And I think I can say for me, there's times where humble, hungry, or smart are my lowest. And we're always growing in all three of those areas, hopefully, right? And these are little indicators of where a lack of humility might creep in. And even as I'm listening to you talk about it, I'm reminded, you know what? Sometimes I'm embarrassed if I miss something because I'm not seeing everything in the room. But every time that I acknowledge that, it actually gains the respect of people. Rather than trying to hide behind it, which is actually a lack of humility, to run right out and say, oh my gosh, I missed that, I'm so sorry, tends to build trust. Am I making sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this point is critical. I'm glad you said this, because for those people out there, all of us do things that are not humble. And all of us have been invulnerable in a meeting.
Yes.
And it's not a matter of just missing it. It's a matter of actually being weak in that moment. And we can all go and say, I want to tell you something. I was actually too scared to admit I was wrong, or too, I was feeling insecure about acknowledging your point because it made me feel less than myself because you had a better idea than I did. That is hard to admit, but that is the sign of somebody who wants to get better. It's that person who constantly defends, and you're like, am I crazy? Why do they keep doing that? And they don't seem bothered by it. That's when you need to say, maybe something needs to happen. But nobody gets out of life without occasionally being less than humble, less than vulnerable. And sometimes we go through a little season where we're more like that. The question is, are they willing to acknowledge and admit it and regain the trust of the people on their team? Or is it something that is so deep and so hard for them to admit that it's going to continue to harm people? And so that brings us to the end of this conversation. Thanks for joining us on our 200th episode. We're going to do a unpaid ad. Since this has gone long, we're going to do that unpaid ad for this little podcast we heard about called At the Table. If you haven't listened to it, you really should.
You really should. You got all the way through this episode. You might as well.
Yeah. And really, my unpaid ad is for our listeners, because when we get comments from them, or I meet people and they go, oh yeah, I listened to it. And 2 weeks ago, you said this, or 6 months ago, you said this, just makes me want to do a great job. I was in Indianapolis last week talking to a bunch of CEOs, and so many of them were quoting the podcast. So that's what our unpaid ad is for, the listeners of At the Table. So thanks for joining us, everybody. God bless. We'll talk to you next time.